On RNIB Connect Radio, we like to speak with organisations from around the world in relation to sight loss because, well, when it comes to your eyesight, there are no geographic or demographical boundaries. Everyone can be affected, and there's lots of work going on all the time, really, to improve people's lives on a day-to-day basis. And today I'm speaking with Frederick Schroeder from the World Blind Union. Frederick, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Frederick, tell me a little bit about yourself then and your involvement with the charity.
Well, I grew up as a blind person. I lost most of my sight when I was 7 years old and became totally blind at 16. And in the United States, I was very fortunate to be connected early on to one of the national blindness organizations, the National Federation of the Blind. And it was through the NFB that I was really given the encouragement to believe I could live a normal, fulfilling life. I had access to rehabilitation services that were provided through government agencies, and of course that was invaluable. But to be rehabilitated, you have to believe that you have a future with worth pursuing. And that came from the consumer organization. All of that, I think, has shaped some of my policies and views on how organizations can best advocate on behalf of blind and partially sighted people. That is to say that there needs to be a partnership between service providers and grassroots consumer organizations, and that the fundamental direction or inspiration needs to come from blind people themselves. So within the World Blind Union, our member organizations include grassroots consumer organizations and providers, and we're always conscious to make sure that the voice of the consumer is the leading voice in policy.
And what about your relationship then with the World Blind Union? Where did that begin?
For many years, I was a leader in the National Federation of the Blind, including serving as the NFB's first vice president. The National Federation of the Blind is one of the U.S. member organizations to the World Blind Union. And so it was through the federation that I began to get involved in committees and so on, going all the way back to 1993, when the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities was being crafted. Since I was in the U.S., I would travel to New York and assist our WBU president, Kiki Nordstrom, who was from Sweden, with the negotiations. And then when Kiki's term expired and William Rowland became WBU president, I continued. So I brought some continuity to that process. So I've been involved with the WBU for a very long time. In 2012, I was elected first vice president. And then in August of 2016, I became president.
The work of the WBU is global because, you know, sight loss, as we said, it's not geographical. It affects many, many people. And you work with charities and other organisations across the globe. Have you noticed a change over the years or the decades then when it comes to things like empowerment, you know, charities advocating more and working closer with governments, commercial bodies to affect change?
Absolutely. And I would say that change in belief that has grown within blind people themselves, that they have the ability to live a fully participating, integrated life, and that what they need is opportunity. They need access to education, to technology, to basic blindness skills training. But the shift has been a shift in a conception of blindness from being simply a physical characteristic to recognizing its social and cultural dimension, making it very much a human and civil rights issue as far as the advocacy that is needed. In other words, UNESCO a couple of years ago estimated that in developing countries, only 2% of children with disabilities are in school. If blind children are going to have the potential to live a fully productive life, it starts with an education. And the barrier to education wasn't so much lack of resources. Of course, resources are part of it, but it's low expectations. In other words, if you're in a very poor country and you have limited money, and there is a class of people that you just know in your heart will need care all of their lives and can never be productive, you're not going to spend resources to educate that population. So that's a cultural, social consequence that limits the lives or the opportunities for blind people. But that is changing, and it's changing steadily around the world.
We often talk about perhaps financial support or technology advances being barriers, but also, you know, helping facilitate change if done correctly. It sounds, though, as if on a global scale, it's more social outdated stereotypes that are holding people back.
Yes, and I would say that the financial and technology and all of those supports, those have to support a fundamental belief that blind people can live full and productive lives. And if you believe it, but yet you're still not in school and have no access to technology and suffer employment discrimination, you may believe it, but it'll be hard to sustain a belief that you're equal if you don't have then the supports to help make that come true. So in the 2012 quadrennium, under the leadership of Kevin Carey, who you, of course, know well and your listeners know well, the WBU Technology Committee undertook the Transforming Braille Project, which has resulted in the Orbit Reader, a refreshable Braille device that will be available for under $500 US, so literally a tenth the price of other products. That's absolutely vital, because if we can get those into the hands of kids in developing countries, suddenly we could open a library of information of hundreds of thousands of books that would then be available in an accessible format to those children.
And education, as you say, the building blocks to, well, continuing education, to growing socially, to employment. So how does the World Blind Union then use its influence? Is there a lot of work done at, say, a United Nations level to highlight these issues and suggest change?
Yes. What we try to do is do the cross-cutting work that is not feasible at the individual country level. So I mentioned the Orbit Reader and getting thousands or hundreds of thousands of books into the hands of children. Well, for that actually to happen, we needed an international treaty that would allow countries to share books in accessible formats with other countries. And so the WBU led an effort with the United Nations through an agency called the World Intellectual Property Organization to adopt what many of your listeners will have heard of as the Marrakesh Treaty. It's short for the Marrakesh Treaty to facilitate access to published works for persons who are blind, visually impaired, or otherwise print disabled. A very bureaucratic, long title, but it's just really a groundbreaking treaty. As countries ratify the treaty, they can share accessible books, and the EU is very close to depositing its ratification documents. It's in the very final step of joining the treaty. The U.S., just last week, introduced legislation that brings the U.S. another step closer. When the EU and the U.S. participate, now you have collections of just, I have no idea what the number of accessible works are, but I'm sure it's in well in excess of 100,000 titles. And so now if a poor blind child in a developing country has access to, say, the Orbit Reader, and his or her country participates in the treaty, now you have access to all of that information. I'm sorry for it to be so technical and convoluted, but the WBU tries to do the cross-cutting international work that needs to be done to advance opportunities for blind and partially sighted people.
That is a huge piece of work, the Marrakesh Treaty. It can bring accessible literature to developing countries, because that ability to share information, to share books, was inhibited by copyright. Now, that being taken away, for the most, gives people a real chance to grow that education and really, you know, make a massive amount of difference. I think, you know, we can't really overestimate what this can do for people just by having access to literature they can read, whether that's Braille or digital.
It's a game changer. And I looked last year in the U.S. what it costs for a single hard copy pressed Braille textbook for an elementary school child. And of course, it depends on the size of the book, etc. But $500 is about the cost of one hard copy pressed Braille textbook in the U.S. So what would have been the needed resource to give a blind child in another country one book, now potentially that child could have access to hundreds of thousands of books.
If we move away from reading then and look at other forms of technology, even in the past few years, the past 5 years, say, much, much more is available now that's accessible. Off-the-shelf technology, smart devices are becoming easier for blind and partially sighted people to use, and opening up the world for leisure and for work and for education. Is that something which WBU is involved in? Do you try to influence commercial companies to make products accessible?
Absolutely. We've done much work over the years with the big producers of access technology. Well, I shouldn't say access technology. That implies the specialized companies. And of course, we do liaise with them. But the mainstream companies, Apple, which of course has been a leader in building in accessibility at the front end, Microsoft, Google, we have relationships with all of the big technology companies around the world. We also have a standing committee on technology, and they are continually monitoring new developments and identifying where changes need to be made. For example, one thing that every one of your listeners will be able to relate to, and that is the frustration in trying to buy home appliances that are accessible to a blind person. I can tell you in the U.S., to try to buy a stove or even a washing machine or a dishwasher, or believe it or not, even a refrigerator that doesn't have a touchpad to operate, is getting harder and harder. Now, having said that, systems like Google Home and the Amazon Echo and the move towards smart houses or smart homes, if we influence those major producers at the front end, we will be able to solve those access issues. But it takes constantly being at the table and reminding them that access needs to be built in at the front end.
That is a huge point you make there in terms of technology. It's a great thing that it can open up more for someone with a visual impairment, but at the same time, it can move so rapidly, companies are competing with each other, that accessibility could be forgotten. But when you think about if it's done at the very beginning and not a retrofit, not a, you know, a patch to fix something later on, it opens up a massive market to companies which are commercial and would open up to markets that have more money to spend as well.
Absolutely.
What about at the moment then, Frederick? What are the big pieces of work going on with WBU? I'm sure it's quite a big thing. There's all sorts going on, never ending.
Never ending. Marrakesh implementation. There are, I think, 192 UN countries, and we have, I think around 36 or so that have ratified the Marrakesh Treaty. And the more countries that ratify the treaty, of course, that's helpful to the individual country because it then has access to the pool of books. It is helpful to the other countries that have ratified because each country brings its own books into the pipeline. But also, it's valuable because once there is a large established infrastructure, then we are protected from the clock ever being turned back. That once it's in place and really working and working well and serving the majority of blind people around the world, then I think the process will have stabilized. So we need individual countries to work on ratification. We continue to work on a UN regulation that would require an alert sound for very quiet hybrid and hybrid electric cars. This is ongoing work. It gets very, very technical, but we have a partial solution right now. That is to say, we have a UN instrument that affects about 50 countries that requires a sound alert device on these very quiet cars. So we're making progress there. We're now working through a vehicle called a global technical regulation, which functions very much like a treaty to try to bring more countries under this umbrella regulation. So again, things that are cross-cutting, these are the things the World Blind Union tries to address.
Just one final point, Frederick. When I talk to people, they often ask me about, you know, my day-to-day life, working, leisure, and so on, you know, being a blind person, a guide dog owner. And I say to them, well, you know, we are now in the 21st century. And to be honest, it's not too bad a time to be blind. And sometimes they're a bit shocked by that, I suppose. But would you agree was that a fair statement?
I think, you know, at a minimum, you would have to say that opportunities are better today for blind people than at any time in history. And I kind of understand the perhaps skepticism that you've encountered in that it's not universally true. As I said, the vast majority of children with disabilities in the developing world are not in school. And so for them, the opportunities are still so limited, tremendously limited. And yet, the technology that we've talked about, the smartphone technology and all of this, it definitely makes life better and creates more opportunities, at least than I can imagine have ever been available to blind people.
Frederick Schroeder, World Blind Union President, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.